This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Hi, I'm David F. Starr from Kewaunee, Wisconsin. The Sound of Young America is an independent production supported by listeners like you and me. If you'd like to donate to support the show, visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
Live on tape from my house in Los Angeles, I'm Jesse Thorne, and this is The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org.
Radio sweetheart, on the airways, it's the sound of young America. Maximum.
It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest this week is Michelle Andegeocello. Before we get to the interview, let's hear a sample from her brand new album, The World Has Made Me the Man of My Dreams. This is Soul Spaceship. It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest on the program, Michelle Andegeocello, has made a career as a bassist, multi-instrumentalist, a contemporary soul artist spanning many genres. And her most recent record is called The World Has Made Me the Man of My Dreams. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. Oh, so you were born in Germany, right? Because your dad was in the service.
Right.
When did you move to D.C.?
Oh, not until I was about, I guess, like 10, 11, but the formative years.
Were you between places before
that? Oh, yeah. We moved around quite a bit, but I'm definitely a southern person. I lived mostly in Hampton, Virginia, Alexandria, Virginia, Richmond, Virginia. Then we came to D.C., Maryland area. So I feel that's my home.
When did you start playing music?
About 14, I got the bug. My brother played the guitar. My father plays music as well. Instruments were always around in the house. So it was a good outlet. It was something I could do alone or with my brother. So I enjoyed, you know, picking up an instrument and trying to express myself.
The United States has such a national culture that's very odd for there to be really unique regional art forms. One of them is, you know, I mean, there's club music in Baltimore and
right.
There's go-go in D.C.
Yes.
Did you have go-go in mind when you started playing the bass?
No. Well, it was the first gig I ever got. I was playing in a go-go band. It's just a natural part of my nurturing. But you're right. That music can... And so far has only existed there. So it's a very, provincial experience.
Well, with the possible exception of doing the butt.
Yeah, that's about it. but I don't know if that's going to be a classic. I'll see about 20 years from now. Let's see what happens.
See if people are still doing the butt?
Yeah, I doubt it. But yeah, but it's definitely influenced my playing. And plus I liked hip hop. So I liked the go-go was more of you were trying to... really be an MC and get the crowd involved in a different way than it was, you know, spewing out your thoughts. So I like the combination of both.
Did you ever aspire to be an MC?
Oh, yeah, I think so. When I was young, I was like, I loved Just Ice and KRS-One and Milk and MC Light. And it's sure there's something in me that thought I could. But now I find that genre to... so commercialized, it's hard to find stuff that I can really connect with. But more so, I'm a bassist and a songwriter. I think that's what I've grown into or developed into.
When you were really young and still living in D.C. and you first started gigging, was it weird? Were people surprised that there was a teenage girl playing with the go-go band?
Definitely, I'd get that. But I tried to maintain something that my brother and other friends tried to instill in me, which was don't be good don't get them to say you're good for a girl. Just get them to say, wow, you're good no matter what you are. So that was my main focus. But I would just, ignore the haters and, just try to do my thing.
One of the amazing things about DC Go-Go's is it's this world that is completely self-contained. So you can really be in a band and be a real working musician,
mm-hmm.
playing lots of gigs,
yes.
And never go more than 45 miles outside of
right.
Washington, D.C. What was it that led you to step outside of that world?
Socially, it was very limiting. You're like a big fish in a small pond, and I'd rather be the little fish in a amazing world and see different things. I was inspired to travel. I went to New York and I think in 95 and it just blew my mind. I don't know, my thoughts were bigger. I had the first Prince record and I said to myself, I just want to make records. I want to make records and travel around and play. I didn't really like school too much. Didn't really fit in with what was going on there. I'm like, I liked Go-Go, but I also liked Rush. And, so I just needed to get out and make new friends and try some different things.
Sometimes when you're a bass player, maybe it just comes with an instrument.
Yeah.
You get a Rush CD that just glued to the back of the bass.
Exactly.
Comes like, with yeah. free Rush CD.
Yeah, see, I liked stuff like that and PIL. And I like a wide range of music as a kid. And I just, yeah. really wanted to get out of D.C. and try some other things.
Being a bass player is a really particular thing. We had Raphael Siddiq in here a couple of weeks ago and talked to him. He's another great bass player. How do you think the fact that the bass was the instrument that you picked up has changed your musical path?
Yeah, the bass player is the foundation. It's the only person that can move around on stage, kind of see what's going on. We're the root of the chord. We're also rhythmical. It just made me a more solid musician. And as a singer, it's nice to be able to know the foundation of the music. I am a big fan of bass players.
So when I listen to your records, I'm very aware that you're a bass player because the bass is really the center of your work. I mean, even to some extent on like Bitter or something, which is a much much softer and more guitar oriented record. What do you think are the opportunities that you have, musically and also sort of texturally as a bass player when you're making records? What is it that you can do that somebody else might miss?
I'm always thinking of the colors. Not the line I played or how fast or is it funky or groovy or anything. I'm just thinking about the tone, how the bass hits you coming out your speaker and out of your headphones. I think I pay attention to details like that of just how it sounds and feels coming at you. And as a bass player, I just feel it gives me the ear. I listen to everything. I have to listen to harmony and the drums. I am the center of it all. I keep those two things together. Plus, I feel like the bass player is the humble band member. Like when you play the guitar, you're the singer. Singer, you want to be up front and you have to have a sort of a command. The bass player is just okay with like sitting in the groove, sitting in the cut. Not causing too much trouble. I'm definitely not the hype man in the band. I'm just the gentle one, keeps it all together.
Can you think of a song on this most recent record that had a really particular color that you were shooting for?
Oh yeah, definitely. Article 3 is the one that it's like, I guess I mean, to me it was, I wanted to be like just a sonic barrage. a rhythmical and sonic barrage on the ears. Fat yet edgy. Like, yeah, that's what I was trying to get. Yeah.
and bash to me because I'm ugly. Burden my fads and fashion.
Curses to the cultures of hair.
The devil comes calling in the form of despair.
Because I lied, you think you're better than me.
We're all patriots of a lying, scheming machine.
It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. We'll have more with my guest Michelle Ndegeocello in just a minute when we come back.
Production of the Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered. Online at ask.metafilter.com.
Hi, it's me, Jesse. If you're interested in reaching the Sound of Young America's highly literate, intelligent, and awesome audience, you can use the medium of underwriting. Support the Sound of Young America, and we'll thank you by sharing your message with our thousands of listeners, both here on the podcast, on the radio show, and on our website. If you'd like more information about underwriting on the Sound of Young America, drop me a line at Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, at MaximumFun.org. That's Jesse at MaximumFun.org. It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is the self-described revolutionary soul singer Michelle Ndegeocello. Her new album is called The World Has Made Me the Man of My Dreams. Shortly after high school, you got pregnant and had a child.
Yeah.
How did that change the... That's a very difficult place to be in when you have this idea of, you know, being free and traveling around. How did it change the trajectory of your life?
I just took him with me. I think the thing about... Yeah, I struggle with this topic. I mean, having a child when you're young is very difficult. But at the same time, I think my naivete allowed me to go, I can make it whatever experience I want. So I had great friends and family when I couldn't be there all the time to be with him. But I would just take him with me. He's been on the road quite a bit. I'm sure his memoirs will be different. We'll have a different view. But it just changed me because it wasn't all about me. And I knew I had to be able to take care of myself and another person. But I love children. I love seeing the world through their eyes and watching them because everything's so fresh and new. And you forget that by the time you're 12, you start trying to have your own self. But I enjoyed it. I love children. It was hard at times. I'm sure people say, well, in hindsight, do you think you'd do it differently? And I really don't. I'm grateful for the experience. I loved it. You know?
When did you start performing performing under your own name, performing as a solo artist?
1920, I got to New York. I joined the BRC, the Black Rock Coalition. Got some gigs, had some ideas. I would write songs a lot. I was always interested in recording. Once I realized college and getting out of high school wasn't going to be really my strong point, I went to a engineering facility that, you know, gave you a certificate. You learned to be an engineer,
I thought you were going to say you went to an engineering facility like to get robotic arms.
No. I studied with Bob Yesbeck, this amazing engineer. He mixed Christopher Cross records, stuff like that. And I went and learned some skills. And once I could record my own music, that was it for me. I created my own little world and did my own thing.
When you signed your first record contract, do you feel like you had a sense of who you were and who you wanted to be?
Oh, not at all. And I know I thought I'd never, I just turned 40. I thought I'd never be one of those people that would be like, you know, I look back then and I knew what I wanted. But no, I still don't. You never do. I just feel like I'm on this ride and I take it as it comes. Some things are disappointing and some things are great. But you're never done developing, I guess, as a person or a human being. you know, I can only look back and say I was really excited. I could have done things differently, had a better lawyer, been a little bit more savvy about some issues. But the experience was great. It's got me here, you know. All I knew is I wanted to play. That's all I knew. I knew I had these ideas. I love, the only thing I miss about youth is the sort of that this inner feeling of you can do anything. And that's the only thing I think I felt. I was like, I can do anything. Just let's go record. Let's go do something. I've always been just focused on the music.
Your records, your first album had some small hits on it, and you also had a, well, you know, I mean,
hilarious, yeah.
had some hit. You did have some hit records, and, yeah. And you also had a real big hit on a duet with John Mellencamp.
Oh yeah.
And then it was 3 years before your next record, which was a very different record than the first one.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time, you know, you had a song on there called Leviticus Faggot.
Yeah.
And that was really drawing a line in the sand, putting that song on your record.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, just singing about what I knew about. I mean, before there was Matthew Shepard, I had a friend of mine who didn't survive a beating and being bashed. And so I just, yeah, it was just something that hit me. And plus in my life, learning about who I was, and people judge you and never really get to know you. I just wanted to just tell my story.
So there was no sympathy.
His mother would pray.
Yes, she would.
Save him, save him, save him from this life. His mother would pray.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been for some time out as bisexual.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just a human being looking for love.
Did the way that your identity was affecting your life change between when you made that first record and when you made that second record and moved on and you moved forward in your career? Did it feel different to you? Were you struggling with different issues?
Oh, yeah, just in your personal life. Just the judgment. The first record was, I guess, saw more as R&B. And at that time, R&B was seen as quote-unquote black music. I hate these generalizations. But people of color tend to be the most homophobic. and so it was difficult to hear some of the things I would get from people in interviews or being out while I played. Plus, the only thing I have learned from that, and especially looking at society now, the things that we deem as entertainment, is these reality show personal life things. You're looking into somebody, and only thing I come away with is privacy, especially in your interpersonal relationships, because I realized no one was listening to the fact that I could play the bass or write songs. That became the focal point of everything. And so, I mean, by the third record, I became bored with it, and it was hard that was all anyone would ever focus on.
The third record was called Bitter and was pretty much universally hailed as being spectacular. It's also very, very different from the first two.
Well, hopefully the music hits people with, like, this could be you. I'm just trying to create something that other people can have an experience and a feeling with.
You push me away. Apologies fall on your deaf ears. You curse my name.
I saw you play a show in Santa Cruz when I was in college, and this would, I guess, be 6 years ago, something like mm-hmm. that. And it was you and Black Star, Mos Def and Talib Kweli, right. and Ozo Motley.
Yeah.
It was one of the most surreal concert experiences I've ever had because, as I recall, maybe you were the feature act. I think you might have been the middle act in that right. show. It was Santa Cruz. So there's all these hippies there to see Ozo Motley. And there's all these, you know, kids with literally with backpacks at the time. And they weren't, it wasn't just a metaphor backpack rap at the time. People would wear their backpack to a show, there to see Black Star. And when you stepped onto the stage, all these kind of butch ladies pushed their way, pushed their way up to the front, right? And it was really something because it was these three, you, Black Star, and Ozo Motley, aesthetically are not too far apart from each other.
Okay.
But you,
I love Ozo Motley.
I think by virtue of the fact that you've been so long performing as an out bisexual, you have this very particular audience, and certainly not the totality of your audience. I wonder if you feel in any way like responsible to that audience or feel like it's in any way like if you feel like having that particular audience as opposed to just, you know, the hippies who go see Ozo Motley or whatever.
I don't know. I kind of suck at that, actually. I was
in what way?
Yeah, at the giving, you know, I guess I don't, I'm just a musician. I'm just a singer songwriter. I'm just a human being. And I guess, again, I struggle with that, like, generalizations or, cause I guess last night I played the House of Blues and there are people expecting me to be just like Plantation Lullabies or just like Bitter, like that same person or personality that they've perceived. But all I can do is be myself. I'm like a 40-year-old human being. I just have other things to offer now. And there's no way you could get the whole scope of me in a 70-minute show. So do I have a responsibility? I think my first responsibility is to the music and playing and having quality, being a quality musician and singing the best I can. And all I can hope for, inshallah, is that the people get a good feeling from it too. I think I'm not trying to go to Vegas later on in life and like rehash the past. That's not my goal.
I would have guessed.
Yeah. At 50, I hope, like, you know, I play with, you know, maybe I can get some gigs with Neil Young or something, or play with some electronica band from London and just hang in the back. You don't have to see me. I'm just, you know, I'm hoping for other things, you know, just trying to do other, be as open and curious as possible.
You've played with many, many different artists in many genres as a session player, and you've worked with many artists as a producer and et cetera, et cetera. You made a jazz record a couple of years ago. What are the new horizons that you're exploring now at 40? What's interesting to you?
Sometimes just playing the piano and having a tape recorder and recording the sounds that are just out in the world naturally. What interests me now? I really like movies. I'm like scoring. I want to score something interesting, probably something abstract. I like to make some abstract scores for abstract cinema, things that were just propelled by visuals, not necessarily a linear storyline, stuff like that. I think I would have more interest in that.
Well, Michelle, we'll stay tuned.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me here.
No problem. All Thank right? you so much.
Okay.
Let's go out with a track from Michelle Ndegeocello's 2002 album, Cookie, the Anthropological Mixtape. This is Hot Night.
But it's a hot night. Let's talk about the sign of the time. Politics and the fight of a revolutionary soul singer. It's a hot night. Head down to the blood of the pain and the bottle of alcohol. And let's talk about the world, y'all.
Can you pick me up? You know I hate driving in a evil city. And baby, read my mind. Hit like a dog. I can get some coffee and we can get our talk on. Seems like I caught up in this romanticized idea of revolution. With sabers, prophets, and heroes. But in the silence of my prayers, I had a vision of my hatred dissolving in the grains of sand. Realize that to the universe, that's all I really am. Just a grain of sand. I don't get caught up in all that spiritual shit, but ain't much to hold on to. We all living in the world built upon great starvation, greatly fascist regimes.
That's it for another Sound of Young America program. I've been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our theme music written and performed by Dan Grayson with some help from myself. Interstitial music provided to us by Dan Wally, and the show is edited by Nick White. You can find us online at MaximumFun.org along with our other podcasts. And if you have thoughts about the show, you can post them on our forum or email me at Jesse@MaximumFun.org. I guess that's about all we need to say. We'll see you next time right here on The Sound of Young America.
Yeah, capitalism got them trapped in a vision that tell lies. They watch way more than a sunset. I feed my babies with music. I tell the truth with now. I'm a target and they marketing. That is some of my bitch. It's a urgent emergency courtesy of the...
This message comes from NPR sponsor Viore, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to viore.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.